In this episode of Movie Rollers, we go from drama in the baseball boardroom to drama on the streets of LA. We review Trouble with the Curve and End of Watch. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Hello, both.
Yazdi's back from TIFF.
Yes.
Yay.
We loved your updates, Yazdi.
I was like a kid in a candy store. Couldn't have enough. Literally. Too many movies, too little time. If that's ever true, it's true at a film festival.
And we're going to be doing an upcoming episode where Yazdi's going to talk through some of the TIFF scene stealers.
Yeah, showstoppers, indeed. You mean.
Showstoppers, even.
If I was independently wealthy, all I would do would be just go to film festivals.
Well, you could always sell your body.
Oh, yeah, that'll work out.
All right, well, we have two movies to talk about today. The first one is End of Watch. I would like to put that one first, if that's okay.
Sure.
So, Rashmi, tell us all about End of Watch.
So, from the writer of Training Day, End of Watch is a riveting action thriller that puts audiences at the center of the chase like never before. Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena star as young LA police officers who discover a secret that makes them the target of the country's most dangerous drug cartel. So, this is directed and written by David Ayer, and it stars Jake Gyllenhaal, Michael Pena, Anna Kendrick, America Ferrara, Frank Grillo, and Cody Horn, amongst others. So, did this get your heart rate pulsing, Yazdi? Why don't you start us off?
So there has been talk amongst many of the film critics that this might be one of the best ever cop movies made. And I think the film's greatest achievement is in evoking a real sense of dread that these two policemen face as they confront one situation after another. And maybe the found footage camera work through the entire film, and we can talk about that later, has something to do with it. But in a way, as these men enter these homes of people, you know, gun in hand, breathless with anticipation, we in the audience feel what these two characters are actually going through. And this is very difficult to do in a movie. And I think that this sort of authentic, in-the-moment tension was best done last in The Hurt Locker, and I was kind of reminded of that in this film, and you know, that's a pretty major accomplishment.
Okay, Joe?
Wow, did I freaking love this movie. I think, and yes, we should talk about the reality cam, because frankly, I think I could have done without that. I don't think it held up through the film and needed it, but as a cop movie, as a buddy movie, it was perfect. This is going to make one of my top 10 best films of the year. I really, really had a blast with this movie.
Wow. So I was going to say, if you get motion sickness, don't go and see this film. If you don't like the word fuck, don't go and see this film. If you don't like racial stereotypes, don't go and see this film. However, if none of that bothers you and you want to see a different type of cop movie, rush out and see this one. I like this movie, but unlike you, Joe, I didn't love it. And I was shocked that in the first scene, you literally turned to me before even, I think, 2 seconds of film had been up, and you said, I love this movie.
No, I said, this is going to be good.
Oh, that's right. You said, This is going to be good. I was totally shocked that you could tell that.
Right from the opening speech, I think this movie grabbed me, and I was like, I know I'm going to have a blast with this, because it just felt well written, well made, and well acted, all within the first 30 seconds of the film. So maybe you didn't feel the same way, but for me, this grabbed a hold of me and didn't let go until the end. Can we talk about the camera? Because I think we've all mentioned the camera at this point. So I don't think it added anything at all. I think a standard narrative camera would have been just fine. What did you guys think?
I mean, I'm frankly surprised as to what, you know, at this stage, what this found footage concept, you know, why it continues to beguile accomplished directors. I mean, this is a person who is...
And just before we kind of get too much into it, what we're all talking about here is this movie is done almost like...
Blair Witch Project.
Well, it's almost done like the cops are carrying their own cameras. There's all these kind of concessions where the cops say, you know, I'm wearing this pinhole camera on my thing. Jake Gyllenhaal is walking around at times with a camcorder in hand that he obviously sets up on the police vehicle. So the whole setup of the movie is essentially supposed to be, like you said, Yazdi, as found footage. So that's what we're talking about here. Just so carry on. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, so exactly. The premise is that every single scene in the movie is pieced together by somebody who videotaped it. One of the characters in the movie. So, you know, I think at this point, this whole concept has been so done to death that I don't really see what, you know, accomplished directors continue to find interesting within it. For me, it's like a done deal. It seemed a bit gimmicky. It almost worked against the flow of the film at certain points. So no, I, like you, Joe, I could have done without it. I will concede, however, the one thing that it helped with was in creating that, you know, you are there in that place kind of tension, which I really think is one of the accomplishments of the movie.
Right.
Yeah, I respect the director for trying to do something different. And I say different in inverted commas. And the thing I think that worked for me out of all of the footage was the being in the car with the police themselves. But in terms of all of the different movement, there was too much movement. It was too jiggity-jaggity, and I really felt nauseous, and I don't get car sick.
Yeah, your point about the motion sickness is well taken.
It really didn't do much for me.
Yeah, yeah. It was just a strange directorial choice. I mean, it felt a lot like those, you know, America's Baddest Cop Chases type thing. And that's obviously what they were going for here, but it didn't hold up all the way through. I mean, there were times when there was no cameraman there and we weren't seeing things from the point of view of somebody who had a camera clipped to their lapel. So who the hell had the camera? Like, there's a scene in an alleyway towards the end of the movie. It's like, who the hell has the camera in that scene?
Well, it's almost like they couldn't find anyone to hold the camera. And so they just said, oh, well, we'll just watch them all now. I think
it almost felt like they forgot about the fact that this was going to be a found footage type scenario. And at least, and maybe I'm faulting the film for something that is not at fault. Maybe there was a good explanation in the scene, but just an odd choice.
And to be honest, I think after maybe the first 15-20 minutes, I think the movie is so exceptionally constructed. And I do have two big major problems with the movie, but I cannot fault the construction of the movie. The movie is so exceptionally constructed that I actually didn't even register that it was all found footage. I kind of went along with it. So it kind of almost became subconscious for me.
Right.
So I was going to say, it's interesting that I know, Joe, you've loved this movie. And yes, it's interesting that you're saying that you kind of forgot. But for me, I think the inherent problem I had with the film was it was too predictable boilerplate template for a cop movie. And there was just too much bromance, which I think Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena had this amazing chemistry. And that's what made this film work. But unfortunately for me, it was so predictable. I knew how it was going to end within 25 minutes of the start.
You did not see that ending coming. Come on.
I kind of did.
No.
I kind of did. I knew
Okay.
Okay. I was going to say this may be a spoiler, but...
No, then don't go there.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like you, Rashmi, I have a major, major concern. Like, I think it almost undid the movie for me. I have a major concern with the last third of the movie. I think the movie, without going into spoilers, I think the movie is far too manipulative. And I understand it's the director's prerogative to film scenes a certain way to surprise the audience, to throw red herrings. But, you know, I think the last 20 minutes of the movie, I felt like I was really being jerked around. And I realize I'm singular in this opinion because I haven't seen this pop up in any of the other reviews, but it did bother me.
Well, no, obviously you're with Rashmi on that one. So
yeah,
both of you are just wrong.
You and I are on the other side of the fence.
This is another one where I completely dismiss whatever both of you have to say because I really enjoyed the movie. I think the only thing that I would have thrown away was the kind of the scene post-closing credits where you return back in time to a point previously recorded, which is just an odd thing and it was throwaway.
They shouldn't have done that.
So... I mean,
it's not just throwaway, it's manipulative. It's like, you know, based on what's happened immediately before, it's making the audience feel a particular way. And I resented that. But anyway.
Yeah, and I do agree with you on that point.
Yeah.
But I mean, just to speak to the buddy movie, I mean, the movie is essentially held up by some terrific performances. Peña and Gyllenhaal absolutely nail the nature of their relationship. And these are two guys who are closer than brothers. They will do anything for each other. They are essentially good cops. They are badass, but I think at heart, both of them are very good. And the chemistry between the two of them, the interplay, their external relationships and how they talk to each other just drew me in so tightly. I found that so likable to watch. I felt so engaged with the nature of their relationship and what they felt for each other. So, I mean, Rashmi, it was a bromance movie, but that really was the whole point of it. And I think... in terms of bromances, it's probably the best I've seen.
Yeah, I think it was on par with what we said about For a Good Time Call, where the two women, you know, the essentially For a Good Time Call was...
On par.
No.
Maybe this was a bit more.
Order of magnitude better.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I must say, and I've got nothing more to add about the bromance. You've said it all, Joe. But I do want to say that Gyllenhaal was really good to watch. This was something different for him. I feel like we got something that we haven't seen in him in his acting before. So good job for Gyllenhaal. But for me, Michael Pena was the standout performance in this whole movie. Pena. Michael Pena.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything to add. I think the effortless chemistry between the leading men is a major, major strength of the movie. And, you know a bad script when you see it.
Right.
And, you know, the dialogue here is just, it's so natural and it's so perfectly delivered. You know, and again, Michael Pena in particular comes off really genuine and effortless. I mean, there is a very easy, freewheeling chemistry about all of their dialogue, and you know, David Ayer, I mean, he's a scriptwriter who's you know, been directing movies, and really the strength of his script writing comes through, you know, in terms of the interaction between these two main characters.
Yeah, he did Training Day that Denzel got his Oscar for, and a bunch of others, but Training Day is the one that stands out to me.
And this did feel very reminiscent of Training Day. Now, I didn't realize that he was the same writer-director for Training Day, and what I wrote down in my notes was, this is like Training Day with elements of Crash. In terms of how it portrays racial stereotypes. And that was a big theme that came through for me, the racial stereotypes. But it did feel very reminiscent of Training Day. It had that same feel in the way that the shots are done and the being in the car. So
the being there kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the same. The director of Training Day was Anthony Fuqua or something. But I think this guy was the David Ayer was the same writer. And they say you should write what you know about. And he clearly knows this South Central LA scene really well because this kind of stuff can really fall flat on his face. And, you know, he really does it justice. And you know, I welcome him doing a third movie, you know, within the same setting. So
what
good
a
on
great,
him.
Gritty sort of review of South Central LA. I mean, this is the grittiest I've ever seen South LA portrayed other than a segment in, say, something like 60 Minutes, which is factual. This was incredible. This is not the LA we know.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly it's LA's underbelly. And I think this is the director's turf. He knows it well. And I think he plays with these ethnic stereotypes. But I think that's because he understands these ethnic stereotypes. I mean, no one is left unharmed here. It's not trying to be social commentary in the same way that Crash was. It's nowhere near as sophisticated as that. But it's the nature of gangland LA. You know, you have the black gangs and you have the Hispanic gangs and they clash over things and they all have this clash, which is the police. So, you know, that feel, I think, was very well done. It reminded me a lot of the kind of the gang movies of the, you know, the 90s that we saw post LA riots.
Yeah. The only other thing I want to say is I think there were notable performances from Anna Kendrick and America Ferrera. I think America Ferrera did a fantastic job in this supporting role as a LA cop as well. I really liked her. I wish she'd had more.
Yeah, I actually was hoping to see more of her. And, you know, we all loved a movie at the LA Film Festival. It's a Disaster. And America Ferrera there has a supporting character actor.
Role. Right.
And she was
really
good in that film.
I really look forward to her. And she does an amazing job in that movie as well. But I really look forward to her doing more supporting stuff. I mean, she can really bring it on because she's so particular and so specific. And yeah, I can't wait to see what
she
does.
There was nothing ugly, Betty, about this performance at all. In fact, I kind of had to take a double look.
That was ugly, Betty?
America Ferrera.
That was
ugly,
Betty.
I don't watch enough TV. That's ugly, Betty.
Yes.
She was amazing.
Amazing.
Oh my word. I'm like, this movie's gone up another notch now just for that.
Yeah.
And even Anna Kendrick, I mean, she does this whole little sexy take, which is so unexpected from her, you know. So props to her. I mean, it's such unusual casting. I would never think to pick Anna Kendrick for that. And somehow she makes it work.
Yeah. And she seems to be working hard. And we're going to be talking about her in an upcoming episode.
Pitch Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Let's wind this one up then. If no one's got anything else to say, I think there's a lot to say, but.
That's a lot being said.
There's a lot being said. Yeah. Yassi, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, so this film sticks together remarkably well and is unquestionably entertaining. I mean, most audiences will embrace it wholeheartedly and, you know, lick it up like catnip. For me personally, it was undone a bit, like I said, by a sense of being manipulated at the end. And also by, you know, everything that was happening to these people. I mean, there was so much happening to them. It strained credibility. But overall, I would say this is an uncommonly effective film, very accomplished. I give it 7.5 out of 10. And again, really commend the breathless you are there feeling this movie so successfully creates. I mean, it's very rare to see this. And Joe, before you protest, I'm going to back down from 7.5 to 7. Maybe as I think more about it, it might become an 8.
Yeah, otherwise I'd have shot your ass.
Joe.
So it's a buddy cop movie elevated by the chemistry between the two leads and really given a very real feel by writer-director David Ayer. You know, he knows how to do these cop dramas, and I think he does them extremely well. I thought the movie was one thing that we didn't talk about, but it was horrifically gruesome in places, like horror movie scary and blood and guts scary. So we should warn our viewers of that. But I enjoyed every single moment of this movie, bar maybe the last 30 seconds, but that's okay. 9 out of 10 for me. If you like this genre, I would go see it now. This will be on my top 10 list for 2012.
Gosh, high acclaim from Joe there. So if the description appeals to you, speed to this one and get yourself a ticket. Overall, this is a good movie that's worth a watch just to watch the amazing chemistry between the two leads. I want to actually give this one a 6.5 because it's somewhere between a 6 and a 7 for me.
As I reach for my baseball bat to hit you.
I'll give it a 6.
Okay.
Because I don't think it's going to appeal to everyone. And the motion sickness may get people irritated.
And just to defend what Joe said, I mean, this is not easy stuff. I mean, you know, these cop movies have been made since the 80s. I mean, you know, since Beverly Hills Cop, we've been watching this stuff. It's hard to do something which brings new to the game. And I think this movie really brings it, like, really, you know, redoes the genre almost. So it is a fine accomplishment.
Glad I didn't have to get my baseball bat to get you to round up your scores, but baseball is the subject of our next film. I know, terrible segue.
Good fun.
Someone's got to do it. I'm the host. So our next movie is Trouble with the Curve, ostensibly a baseball-themed movie. And who is introducing this one? Yazdi, you want to tell us all about Trouble with the Curve?
Indeed. So Robert Lawrence, who has served as first or second assistant director on many of the films directed by Clint Eastwood, from Bridges of Madison County to Million Dollar Baby, makes his directorial debut with Trouble with the Curve. He has also, not surprisingly, convinced the 83-year-old Eastwood to star in this film, the first time in almost 20 years that Eastwood has acted in a film directed by someone other than himself. Written by Randy Brown, the film revolves around an aging baseball scout, played by Eastwood, who is scouting for the Atlanta Braves. He's on the road on a recruiting trip in North Carolina to potentially secure a promising young baseball star. Even though he's losing his vision, he's too grizzled to seek help either medically or from his friends. His daughter, played by Amy Adams, has long lost her patience with her father, who is uncommunicative and harsh. And even though she herself is on the brink of being appointed as a partner in the law firm where she works, she decides against her better judgment to join her father and perhaps help him during his scouting trip. What did you guys think about this movie?
So I don't, you know, sports stories aren't my favorite, but no need to worry because I think this is more a story about fathers and daughters set against a backdrop of baseball. Overall, I enjoyed this film, but now I know why Clint Eastwood was so grumpy given he was forced to do the role.
For me, I found this movie a little bit pointless. I don't know who we were supposed to care about. Was it Clint Eastwood's film? Was it Amy Adams' film? I don't know. I settled on Amy Adams and watched the movie from that perspective, but I thought it was all a bit tedious. Not boring, just tedious, because, I mean, it didn't put me to sleep, but I did find myself looking at my watch a couple of times in the first hour, and that's more than I ever do. Rashmi knows that it's a pet peeve of mine to look at a watch during a movie.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, this film is a consummate crowd pleaser. I mean, it's the kind of film that will probably play well in almost any quarter. But like you, Joe, for my test, it tended to get awfully close to cliche a few too many times. I mean, it really has nothing new to say about this. And this story, I think, could have really harnessed all kinds of issues. And I was surprised at the superficial treatment of this material. So I have to admit that the film is effective, but it seems like a lost opportunity in terms of it could have been so much more.
Yeah, I think the problem for me, and I said it in the intro, was I found Clint Eastwood's grumpiness so much of a caricature, and it kind of took me out of the movie. And overall, I just found the movie so melodramatic.
Right.
And it felt like the plot was just a repeat. So it was almost like, you know, daughter takes a trip to fix the relationship, father backs away, and it keeps happening, keeps happening, keeps happening. And so it was difficult to kind of stay with it.
Yeah. Yeah, Eastwood was reprising the role that he had in Gran Torino, but that was so much more fun a film in terms of the issues that it tackled. But it was a grumpy old man, Eastwood. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And for me, I think the rest of it was just very run-of-the-mill. You know, it was not... There was nothing spicy here. You know, it was just bland entertainment. And I hate to do that to a movie. I hate to say that about something that people have obviously put a lot of work into, but it was just tedious.
Yeah, I mean, it's that with Eastwood's character, I mean, you nailed it. It's just an extension of his character, Walt, whatever, from Gran Torino. And it's that crotchety, angry at everybody, stuck in his way, cigar chewing, won't listen to anyone, curmudgeon. And I know, actually, you know, to his credit, I know somebody in real life who is exactly, and I mean exactly like him.
Don't speak but about Joe like that, Yazdi.
Not quite, but I really know somebody personally who's very, very similar to this character. But even then, I mean, Eastwood can do this kind of stuff in his sleep. And, you know, I mean, there are literally way too many shots in this movie of, you know, Eastwood staring at the screen, like literally glowering, you know, with his eyes bulging out. And then him, you know, literally, in many instances, he doesn't even reply to something. He just like growls. He just does grrr. I mean, like you said, Rashmi, he really is a caricature of himself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think so, so highly of Eastwood as a filmmaker. I mean, I think he's one of the uncelebrated American filmmakers of our time. That to see him in something so subpar at this point.
Yeah, we've had this discussion before.
You know,
I'm
almost ashamed for him. Go on.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I know we've had this discussion before about Eastwood, Yazdi, when his last film about the tsunami came out. And I know that it was one that you were more enamored with than I think Joe and I were. And I think we just expect more from Eastwood. He's a veteran. I mean, he's been around forever. He's been around for nearly a century. So I expect more from him.
I don't think it was necessarily his performance here. I think it was the character as written on paper. He did exactly what I think the script said. It's just, it didn't feel like they had given enough thought to who that character was supposed to be. And so you end up with this kind of flat character because, you know, he does what he's supposed to do. And I think that was really the fault of the writing. And it was a fault common to all of the characters in the movie. I mean, Amy Adams, I love her to bits. I think anyone that listens to Movie Wallace knows that I'm a huge fan of hers. And she didn't have a lot to do here either, other than, you know, go through the motions to be the, you know, the career lawyer with the troubled relationship with her father. So, again, there wasn't much to these characters.
Yeah, I think the two things that saved it from it being an awful movie in my mind was, Justin Timberlake. I think he really held his own against Clint Eastwood and Amy Adams, so I liked that performance. And I think that they captured that father-daughter relationship fairly well. I found myself tearing up at a few points in time. But, you know, when you talk about the relationship that you see in, like, you know, Michael Peña and Jake Gyllenhaal, which we just spoke about, this is leaps and bounds away from that.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, my point is, my big complaint is why this film always hugs the middle of the road so much. I mean, I wish it had taken some more chances, gone a little deeper, a little darker. Because, you know, there is much to be said about this relationship. And the movie just kind of is not even interested in delving too deep. So, you know, I personally think one of Eastwood's great accomplishments through all the movies he's made in the last 10 years is he's been so successful in skewering away from sentimentality. I mean, he really doesn't get all sticky. And this movie is very sticky with its sentimentality. So I think this would have been a far superior movie if Eastwood himself had somehow managed to direct it.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And that last movie, by the way, was Hereafter.
Hereafter. Gosh, yeah. I don't even remember the title.
And then the other piece, like you, Rashmi, for me, one of the strengths of the movie, I mean, there were two strengths of the movie. One big strength of the movie is I really bought into the relationship between Justin Timberlake and Amy Adams' character. I think that was, for me, that worked the most in the movie. There was a naturalness to it. And I don't know if it was these actors. And I agree, this is, you know, Timberlake's one of his better turns. I mean, I think he does a really good job, probably the best since The Social Network. So I really liked what Timberlake had does here. But again, you know, imagine if he had a better, you know, a better movie to invest that in.
Okay.
And then the second thing I really liked about the movie is, as pat and as contrived and as sentimental as the ending was, I have to concede it worked for me. It was effective. Like you, I teared up in spite of all of that. So in some ways, you know, the movie got what it wanted out of its audience, at least out of me.
Yeah, stopped short of the curve and went full circle.
Yeah.
Bad joke. All right, let's wrap this one up. So, Joe, why don't you start us off?
Dull, a little flat, uninspiring, very ordinary, predictable from the get-go. And, you know, they did try to change things up with the flashbacks here and there. And there was this reveal towards the end of the movie, which was supposed to explain everything. But by the time it arrives, it was so forced and so unbelievable that I found it hard to care. So I really didn't rate this movie very highly at all. This is going to get a 5 out of 10 from me.
Yes, Dee.
I give this movie a 6.5 out of 10, and I'm going to bump it up to 7 because I know this is the kind of movie where I'm in the minority. I think this movie is going to play really well because it's so broad, and I think it's going to appeal to, you know, Eastwood's legion of fans. And, you know, it's not a bad movie per se. It's just a underachieving movie with these actors, you know, and with this story. It's so much of a lost opportunity. So 6.5 out of 10.
But you're bumping it up to 7.
I'll bump it up to 7.
So really, you're giving this the same score as the one before?
End of Watch.
Okay, then I'll bump it down to 6. Good point.
Yeah. Well, I just want to make sure that we're calibrating appropriately. Okay,
six
the trouble
is.
I'm being QC. Okay, the trouble I had with this curve was there wasn't enough tension in this movie, and it was all too predictable, like you said, Joe, and wrapped up nicely at the end with a nice red bow. Despite that, I did enjoy the father-daughter relationship, and it even brought a tear to my eye at one point, but it wasn't enough to make me recommend this to anyone, so I think it's an average movie. I liked it way less than I liked End of Watch. This is going to be a 5 out of 10 for me.
The curve was indeed troubled in this case. All right, well, let us know what you think. Mail at moviewallahs.com, twitter.com/moviewallahs. Visit the website as well and interact with us that way. Until our next show, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. Good night from me.
And me.
Me as well.